Well, hello, friends. Welcome to the Pastor's Cut podcast. This is the podcast for the first Sunday after Easter on April 7th. Hard to believe we're already now into April in 2024.
I know, and it's already Easter. This whole year is just like bumped up.
I know, it's crazy.
Bumped up?
Bumped up.
How do you spell that?
B-U-M-P-E-D.
Oh.
But then you put a flare on it.
Oh, okay. Bumped. All right.
So we just sat down a moment ago to get ready to record, and Marissa said, my microphone smells like coconuts.
Yeah, it was really strange, but it's because it's like practically up my nose over here.
And it's because I have a cup of coffee. I always carry coffee with me, and I've got coconut-flavored coffee. So
that ain't right.
Mystery solved.
There you go.
Yeah. But I'm thinking about getting like a spray or something. It's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, get a little fragrance spray from my mic.
It doesn't necessarily taste like coconut like it smells, but it's got a good smell to it.
Yeah,
it's
kind of
funny.
Yeah.
It just tastes like coffee, which is good. We like coffee.
Yeah.
Well, as we're diving in, I can't think of anything to banter about. Can either of you guys, for our icebreaker?
How do you like your coffee?
I like it black. I like it plain. Mm-hmm. I'm a simple guy.
Really?
Yes.
Just when I come to your office and you give me coffee, it's never plain coffee.
I usually have flavored coffee.
This is true.
This is true, but it's black.
Black flavored coffee.
Black
okay.
flavored yeah. coffee.
No, that's not black coffee.
Now we're going to get in a fight. Black this is a banter,
is black
sirs.
Coffee.
Okay, I don't have the kind of coffee that you can put like hair on your lips
no,
or hair
just
in your
regular
chest
old Folgers.
Okay, well, when I was developing my taste for coffee, mm-hmm. I went with black coffee because when I would be at like the 24-hour diners, mm-hmm. you know, when the waitress sure. comes around and refills and they've like messed up your perfect ratio.
Yes.
If you just go with black.
They can't mess it up.
Can't mess it up. So.
Yes, this is true.
Yeah. Like an Americano.
Like you know, like okay, so we're not doing like product endorsements things here, but there is a restaurant nearby the church mm-hmm. where mm-hmm. I go on a weekly basis and have breakfast taco and a cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's just a cup of coffee. It's nothing flavored. There's nothing. I don't put anything in it. And to me, it is the perfect cup of coffee. And I thought, this has got to be some expensive nonsense. I mean, you know. And no, it's Folgers. They nice. Just make it right. It's
okay.
really good coffee. For my taste. Now, everyone's taste is different.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But so, it's not bitter, but it's strong. It tastes like coffee. It's fantastic. And it's, you know, just keep filling up your cup till you're done. Yeah. So I love it.
Well, the worship ministry has their own espresso machine now. And yeah. Jeff made me an Americano the other day that I'm still thinking about.
Oh, boy.
It was real good. So.
We may have to go over there afterwards and have Jeff make us some coffee.
You have to get a college degree to operate that machine.
When you guys first got it, it took him like 30 minutes to make a cup.
Oh, yeah. My.
He's streamlined it now. Yeah. He's getting really he's very good.
Yeah. He's not passing that knowledge on to the rest of the staff yet.
He's hoarding the knowledge.
He wants it to be proprietary.
Yeah, exactly.
Unlike coffee that takes forever to figure out how to even make, we're looking in Mark chapter 1.
There's
where
a segue.
We have, I know, ever there was a segue, here's one. We get Mark's shot of immediacy again and again and again. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at Mark chapter 1, verses 40 through 45, where we see yet another immediate snapshot of Jesus in action. Mm-hmm. And so with that, Marissa, why don't you go ahead and read the short passage for us?
Sure. This is Mark 1, 40 through 45. A man with leprosy came to him and begged him on his knees, "If you are willing, you can make me clean." Jesus was moved with compassion. He reached out his hand and touched the man. "I am willing," he said, "be clean." Immediately the leprosy left him and he was cleansed. Jesus sent him away at once with a strong warning. "See that you don't tell this to anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them." Instead, he went out and began to talk freely, spreading the news. As a result, Jesus could no longer enter a town openly, but stayed outside in lonely places. Yet the people still came to him from everywhere.
I love this short passage because there's so much packed into just a little teeny bit of space. That seems like that's Mark. Mark likes to do that.
This is just the first chapter of Mark, and we're already here.
Yeah, Mark.
He does not waste time.
Put Jesus getting baptized, encountering John the Baptist, having miracle after miracle after miracle, preaching, calling the disciples to make fishers of men. It's a lot of fun stuff happening in a short amount of space. And as we dive into this passage in particular, there's a lot of action, again, that happens in a short amount of space. Jesus, the paragraph, at least in my English translation, begins at 39, where he went into all of Galilee, the countryside, basically, and driving out demons and preaching in synagogues. Mm-hmm. So there's that big announcement at the top, and then we see this encounter with the man with leprosy. What's the first thing that you see that stands out from the passage, Marissa?
Well, you know, I kind of wanted to address that, you know, most of us use the NIV version in our daily study, and mm-hmm. in that's what we give out on Sunday mornings. So if you use the ones that are in the windows, we have the NIV version. And you'll notice, and you might have already noticed, that verse 41 is different in the 2011 NIV. It says that Jesus was indignant. So I kind of wanted to address that straight off, because it completely changes the tone of the passage, and kind of changes our perspective on Jesus. That the NIV translators in 2011 decided that there was this one ancient manuscript that used the word Jesus was angry, Jesus was indignant, instead of moved with compassion. Mm-hmm. And so they chose to go with that translation. I don't necessarily agree with it. Every single other translation, ESV, King James, the earlier NIV, CSB, all go with moved with compassion, moved with pity. But I kind of wanted to address that in case somebody was confused by that, because it really does change the tone. Translators have argued that Jesus's primary mission on earth was to preach, was to cast out demons, just like you were saying from verse 39. Mm-hmm. And so so in this, Jesus was angry because it distracted from his mission. He knew that he wasn't going to be able to preach and teach like he wanted to if these big mobs of people, you remember from Capernaum, what happened after the healing of Peter's mother, if people were just constantly bombarding them with a desire for healing, he wasn't going to be able to live into his true work. But I saw this one quote that said, Jesus's work did not eclipse human need. Addressing human need was the work, and Jesus was filled with compassion. So if you do stick with that Jesus was indignant translation, my opinion is that if he was indignant, it wasn't an indignation towards being asked to heal, because we then see he's immediately moved with compassion with his action by the way he touched the man, but that he was angry at the system that was set up that told this man and others like him that he was unclean, mm-hmm. that he was mm-hmm. worthy of being shunned, that he was unworthy of human dignity. It's those kinds of things that angered Jesus, not being asked to heal.
Yes, absolutely yes. So while you were talking for a minute, I wanted to look at the Greek New Testament to see mm-hmm. what word was used there. And because typically it's the word splachna,
right.
that's the word used for compassion. And for most of you, it doesn't matter what the Greek text says.
I've got links to share with you afterwards. Yeah, they thought it was a completely different word, that it wasn't even splachna. So yeah.
So what do you mean it doesn't, people don't care? That's how it was written.
It's how it was written, but for the average person who has their English New Testament, it's not as important as trying to read the Bible and just understand what does it mean for me.
Yeah, okay.
That's where most people live, and so I love diving into Greek for me because I have access to it. I can understand it. For those that care to know, mm-hmm. it's a fun thing to do. But for the average person, at the end of the day, we just want to know, okay, what's the big deal? Why did this guy that lived 2,000 years ago? Why does he even matter to me today? Why mm-hmm. does his story even matter to me? And I think Mark answers those questions in very tangible, practical terms through the passage. And so whether it was splachna, whether it was a different word, and it was a different word, it wasn't splachna in the text, but as we look at that, Jesus intervened into a very practical situation. He acted in a way that only God can. And so the first thing that stuck out to me, because I was looking at the English, I didn't look at the Greek, was the word compassion. That, mm-hmm. that word that Jesus immediately was, he saw what was happening. He was moved to do something.
Yes.
He was stirred to act. And so there was some guttural response. They believed in antiquity that people, you know, they used that word to describe this deep stirring mm-hmm. within him mm-hmm. that he couldn't simply stand by and watch the guy be as he was.
Right.
And so he stepped into the guy's life. He chose to intervene. He chose to do something. But then he chose to do it in a way acting like God himself. Mm-hmm. He stretched out his arm.
Yes.
Sounds a lot like Psalm 136. He touched the guy. Sounds a lot like Genesis 1. And then he spoke. Also sounds like Genesis 1. Mm-hmm. And in doing those things, the guy experienced healing.
Right. Yeah. And that was before he gave him the healing, was that he touched him, which reminds me of so many other instances of healing. And specifically in Luke, Luke will often do this where he will show that he affirmed the person's dignity mm-hmm. and their belovedness before mm-hmm. he gives them the healing. So this healing doesn't make you someone worthy to be touched. Jesus was fully willing to touch him before he was made clean. Because of his leprosy, you know, he had been removed from society. He'd been removed from religious worship.
Right.
He was like this barrier was put up that completely separated him from both his community and from God. Mm-hmm. But just the act of him asking for that healing of leprosy, it was one of the only diseases that could only be healed by a miraculous encounter with God. So that was the common understanding. So what he was saying when he asked Jesus, "I know you can heal me if you're willing," he was saying, "I know that you are God." So right. that was that affirmation that that he understood who Jesus was, and that God would touch him, that is just a beautiful thing that affirmed to him that that separation was man-made, that separation did not exist,
yes.
And the desire, the desperation was not to be healed from this horrible, horrible disease, but to be made clean, to be given access to God again and the ability to worship him.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think there's something about labels in this passage, too. How many mm-hmm. times do we, it might be worthwhile even having a conversation in your community group, what kind of labels do we put on people? And how by those labels, then, do we color and interpret their version of reality or what's going on with them? In antiquity, this guy in particular, anybody with leprosy, they would have been thought of as someone who is a sinner, which is mm-hmm. why they were in their state.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they were horrible. They were in a horrible relationship with God, which is why God had chosen to give them this horrible disease that meant that they had to be outcast and everything else. But here's God touching a sinner mm-hmm. that had to be completely isolated and alone, and God is intervening in their midst. So maybe there's something there about the labels and the way we address people that God has a different perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was... if it was not a personal sin that that person had committed, the lepers represented sin in the mm-hmm. eyes of the community. They were seen as an image of sin to teach the community. And all the precautions that were put around them weren't necessarily because they were contagious, but because they represented death. Mm-hmm. There was nothing more defiling than death. And the lepers were known as the living dead. So it kind of became, you know, you were supposed to stay 6 feet away from a leper, but in the days of Jesus, it had become almost kind of a game of proof how righteous you were, how mean you could be to a leper. You didn't greet them. If you saw a leper on the street, you turned the other way. There was a rabbi that said, "I don't even buy an egg on a street that a leper walked down," you know? And because rabbis specifically were supposed to be men of righteousness, you know, they mm-hmm. really went out of their way to completely avoid the lepers because they no longer saw them as human beings, but as a picture of death and sin. So Jesus saying that this is, "I am a rabbi who sees your humanity, I am the God mm-hmm. who sees you," is really, really profound. Not as much to us, but it certainly was to this leper.
What I love about the word choice there with the word compassion, every time you see compassion in the Gospels in particular, it's usually tied to Jesus being in a situation where he observes someone or observes a setting. He has this guttural response, and then he acts.
Mm-hmm.
He sees someone who's treated unjustly. He sees a group of people that are walking through really hard circumstances, and so he responds accordingly. And I wonder if there's something in there for us too, rather than seeing something and just getting frustrated or getting angry or writing it off, to see and to listen to what God would have us to do and mm-hmm. pray in that moment. Say, "Okay, God, I'm observing something that doesn't fit my normal paradigm mm-hmm. of what I'm seeing. What should I do with that?"
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just the reminder, you know, this is wrapped up in the sermon series about loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned about the way that we label people. To see people the way that Jesus saw them with his perspective and his eyes, and to see their heart as desperate for belonging,
yes.
Desperate for community, desperate for God, to see the loneliness in people that are being shunned and isolated. This reading at this time just reminds me of the Chicken Soup Brigade. I don't know if you're familiar with that movement. But during the early 80s, during the AIDS crisis,
mm-hmm.
There were so many people that died, and part of the tragedy of that situation was some of them were in hospital beds starving to death because no one would enter their room to feed them. So this volunteer brigade, the chicken soup brigade, would come in, show them compassion, give them, you know, they couldn't heal the disease, mm-hmm. but they could show them that they still deserved compassion, still had humanity, and to feed them when other people, when medical staff refused to feed them. And that was inspired by the Christians of Carthage, mm-hmm. who during mm-hmm. the plague of Carthage and the other plagues that hit the Roman Empire in the early, about 250 AD, when all of the pagan people fled the cities afraid of the plague, it was the Christians who were excited to be able to share the hope of Christ with people by going into their homes, by feeding them, by showing them compassion, by touching them, by mm-hmm. giving them love. So we have the opportunity to share hope with other people in really profound ways when we see people that other people, when the majority of people have shunned. We should not shun them, but see it as a opportunity to show our love and our hope.
Absolutely, yes. I, speaking of loneliness, I mean, you might even talk about as a group, you know, how many times do you see lonely places or places of isolation in the text? Mm-hmm. It pops up more than once in our text, and you know, talk about how should that or could that color our interpretation? Because Jesus, you know, early on, a man with leprosy came up to him. The only way a man with leprosy could come up to him is outside the city, mm-hmm. if he's out in the countryside somewhere in a lonely place. And then at the end of the passage, you know, he went out after the man was proclaiming what Jesus did. Jesus could no longer enter towns openly, but he was out in deserted places, and it was out in deserted places that people could find Jesus and could find hope.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I love that twist of words there as well, that there's something about, doesn't matter where we are, doesn't matter how lonely or isolated we feel, mm-hmm. we're going to find Jesus.
Yes, yeah, yeah, he's right there, yeah. And the last few verses where he's talking about how the man did go back to the town and did spread the word, you know, I think I've heard some very judgmental things, and you're quick to judge a guy for, you know, Jesus gave you very explicit instructions and you put this whole thing in jeopardy, mm-hmm. and why didn't he keep quiet? But we're very judgmental of a man being so excited to tell everyone about his encounter with Jesus when we are commanded to tell people and we stay quiet. It's kind of a yes. twisted thing. It's like, yeah, we're awfully quick to judge somebody's excitement to tell Jesus. So yes, he disobeyed, but yes, we all do.
And it also seems like that was God's plan anyway, yeah. to get the word out that there was hope, that the kingdom of God was present in their mm-hmm, midst. And mm-hmm. and Mark begins this entire section of Mark 1:15 by Jesus saying, the kingdom of God is right here in your midst. That future reality of heaven is available right here and right now. And then time and time again, he demonstrates that. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those moments where you can tangibly demonstrate, experience God's peace, God's presence, no matter how lonely you are. It's a reminder that God is there.
Yes, yeah.
Anything else that you saw standing out from the text that you want to bring to light?
No, I'll bring it back in the pastor's cut, and we'll talk a little bit more in depth about things, but I think that's it for right now.
Okay. If there's one more thing maybe that I would say would be worth doing as a group, and you might be going there in the pastor's cut, you might not, I don't know. I would look at Psalm 136.
Mm.
Psalm 136 is where we get, you know, Chris Tomlin years ago wrote a worship song. I'm trying to think of the chorus. Forever God is faithful, forever God is true.
Mm-hmm.
That really cool worship tune, but it came from Psalm 136. Mm-hmm. And so I'd read that and then read what Jesus did and compare apples to apples here. Mm-hmm. What is Jesus doing to demonstrate who he really is?
Right, yeah, yeah, 136. His love endures forever. His love endures forever. His yes. love endures forever.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
And that brings us back to Carthage. You know, the people around saw the people loving each other, the Christians loving each other, and said, look how they love each other well. And that's what we should aspire to.
Yes, absolutely. Brad, do you have anything else that you can think of from the passage?
No, I do think there's a difference in being remote and being lonely.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yes.
We look at a place and we go, well, there's nothing there. That's a lonely place. Yeah, not necessarily. You know, I think it's a mindset thing, you know.
Yeah.
If you're walking with God, yeah, you'll have those lonely moments, but they're few and far between if you're actually mm-hmm. walking with him,
because mm-hmm.
you've got, you know, the presence of the universe on your side. I prefer remote places.
Yeah, that's honestly what I was going to say. Your favorite places are the lonely ones.
Yeah.
But I don't feel lonely there.
Right, exactly. You know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I have felt lonely there. Like when I got in trouble, I was like, oh, I wish someone was here. It would be nice to have a person here now. But yeah, I don't want to categorize every place that's isolated and remote as a lonely place. Mm-hmm. It's not. It's your mindset, I think.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And there's an organ music on cue. It's really nice.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's,
yeah, very cool. And I think what this passage is doing is just reminding us that as people are walking around without Jesus, they encounter Jesus,
yep,
and mm-hmm, and they find hope.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's helpful about this.
Yeah.
With that, I think we'll go ahead and wrap up for the day. If you guys have any questions, please refer to Marissa. Marissa's doing a great job writing the Pastor's Cut podcast, or podcast, the Pastor's Cuts themselves. So thank you for doing that, Marissa.
Yeah, no problem. Enjoy it.
And we will see you guys back here again next week for another podcast edition. So may the Lord bless you and keep you and cause his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. Amen.
Amen.